Doom do 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 doom do do. Doom do 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 doom do do.
Hi, plant people. Welcome to episode 63 of
Boom and Grow Radio.
Hi, plant friends. I hope you're doing well. I've had the kookiest week. We were in Oklahoma City and there were three different tornadoes that either like touched in Oklahoma City or just north. So I've had a crazy week. I also got strep. I was laid out for a few days, but it's not keeping me from making this podcast for you. I'm currently in Fayetteville, Arkansas, which apparently has a really beautiful botanical garden. I also visited the botanical garden in Oklahoma City and it was gorgeous. And when this airs, I will be in Cincinnati. Thank you to the new patrons from Patreon for Bloom and Grow Radio. I am so thankful to all of you guys. You guys are showing up for me. To the people I haven't called out on this podcast yet, Nicole Reagan, Christina Ridgway, Rebecca Redston, Deani Wood, Rhiannon from RT1 Home, Sarah Beth, Pamela, Dylan Barnes, Ross, Sarah Santorno, Lindsay Prosinski, Daniel Salgado, Mason Cruz Reyes, Megan Robas, Molly, Anne Vandenberg, Vibe Have, Eileen Button, Melinda Dickhouse, Jordan Cole, Samantha C., and Sarah Capro. Thank you. Thank you so much for supporting the show and helping me continue to bring these episodes to you guys for free. If you're interested, head to patreon.com/bloomandgrowradio to become a plant friend of the show. Speaking of plant friends, I'm so excited to bring this conversation with Kevin Espiritu from Epic Gardening to you guys. He is a recent plant friend IRL for me. He lives in San Diego and we got together for a drink, a very quick drink in San Diego, and we're immediate friends. You'll hear us talk about it a little bit in the beginning, but it's really fun sometimes when you meet these plant friends that you've been talking to online for so long and you do just have that like immediate click. And we didn't even end up talking about plants that much. We just had so much fun, and I'm so thankful that I'm getting to connect with so many of you guys because of this tour. So after talking IRL with Kevin, I realized that we had to have him on the show, and he has houseplants, but he is predominantly an outdoor gardener. He has an incredible urban gardening setup in his home and is actually publishing a book called Field Guide to Urban Gardening. So I figured I'd have him on the show for a fun, spirited conversation on the differences between indoor and outdoor gardening and then his fundamentals for those of us who have maybe only done indoor gardening, maybe have a little bit of space like I do and want to stick our toe into the pool of outdoor gardening, container gardening. Tis the season, friends. If you're in the Northern Hemisphere, it's growing season. Time to learn how to grow our own food and have that amazing experience. So I hope that this episode and this talk with Kevin inspires you guys to maybe try and grow something that you haven't grown before. Get those plants out in the sun, figure out what your outdoor environment is like, and maybe choose a plant and experiment growing something in it. I know personally I've just benefited immensely from my outdoor garden. I feel like I've learned a lot about plants and how they are intended and designed to grow, and I've been able to apply that knowledge to my indoor plants. And I'm thankful I have the opportunity to do both. And if you don't have outdoor space, you can always get a really great grow light and still grow edibles indoors. You can go back and listen to episode 12 on everything you need to know about indoor grow lights for more info on that. And if you get inspired, the link to Kevin's book will be in the show notes. So before I introduce you to this botanical bro that I really have grown to love, Kevin, I want to introduce you guys to a new Bloom and Grow Radio podcast sponsor and a garden pot and accessory company that I love, Bloom Living. So plant friends, Bloom Living, and that's spelled B-L-O-E-M, Living, is a manufacturer of flower pots and garden accessories that are elevating and reimagining the way we garden. All of their products are made in the USA, and you can find them online for easy ordering or in retail outlets and garden centers nationally. So if you are planning on growing something this season, maybe you do get inspired from this episode, Bloom Living really makes a container or an accessory for any outdoor space. Whether it's planters that hang on your balcony railing, they're super efficient for any of us, like me, who have teensy tiny outdoor space, and Kevin and I talk about that in this episode. They make window boxes, planters. They make standalone planters. They make the most adorable decorative flamingos that you can stick in your pots and in your garden, or bird baths to bring some whimsy to your garden. And they also make one of my favorite products. It's called their bloom bags, which are foldable gardening containers imagined for any outdoor vertical or horizontal space that are made from 100% recyclable materials. How cool is that? I also love that they have handles on the sides of them that are super sturdy, and it makes them super easy to move around my little balcony space. And their material is foldable, so at the end of the gardening season, Billy and I can empty them out, fold them up, and store them for the off season, because Lord knows they're not getting any sunlight or not getting any growth in the winter season in New York City. Like I said, Bloom Living has a product for any type of gardener or any type of outdoor space. So check out all of their smart designs. Head to bloomliving.com. It's spelled B-L-O-E-M, living, L-I-V-I-N-G.com, to find out all of the incredible products that they make. You can also look up your local dealer on their website, or you can shop online at Amazon, the Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart, Wayfair, JCPenney, Overstock. For your convenience, I've included the link to Bloom's Amazon storefront in the show notes, and I've also made a little Bloom shopping list on my Amazon affiliate storefront, so you can check out which Bloom containers I'm actually using in my garden this season. All of those links will be in the show notes, my plant friends, but I certainly hope you go check out bloomliving.com to see all of the amazing garden containers and garden accessories that Bloom has thought up to make our lives easier. Okay, here's Kevin. Do you have upcoming travel to a different country scheduled, or maybe you have a relative or a friend who speaks a different language that you want to connect with on a deeper level? Why not easily learn a new language with my favorite language learning tool, Rosetta Stone? I recently went to Italy and I brushed up on my Italian by using the Rosetta Stone app for like 20 minutes every morning. It was so easy to use. It was part of my morning practice. It was really fun. And let me tell you, Rosetta Stone works. It brushed me up so good. I was getting around Italy easily speaking Italian after putting those reps in. If you don't already know, Rosetta Stone is the trusted language learning tool available on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone has 30 years of experience, millions of users, and 25 languages offered. It makes language learning so fun, so easy, and so fast. It immerses you in the language, which is the fastest way to learn. So it's an intuitive process with no English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in the language. It even coaches you on pronunciation with its true accent feature, which is like basically having a physical trainer for your accent. It's so wild. The desktop and app options make it so easy to do consistently, and it's an amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages forever for any and all trips and language needs in your entire life. So this year I brushed up on my Italian, but next year Billy and I want to go to Japan so we could learn conversational Japanese with it. That's lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone has to offer, and right now they're offering 50% off. It's an insane steal. So don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Growing Joy with Plants listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life, plant friends. It's an insane deal. Redeem 50% off at Rosetta, R-O-S-E-T-T-A, stone.com/today. Kevin, welcome to Bloom and Grow Radio.
What is up, Maria? How's it going?
I'm so happy to have you on my show after meeting you IRL. Was it last week or 2 weeks ago? I'm like losing track of time with all this traveling.
I actually don't remember either. I think it was last Sunday, though.
Yeah. Speaking of not remembering, I feel like we need to give the Bloom and Grow community a taste of, we had like the most epic Plant Friends IRL experience in San Diego. I was there with cats and you picked me up at the stage door and we hung out for a few hours and really didn't talk about plants that much.
No. We talked about plants almost 0%, I would say.
Yeah, it was really fun to see you. We drank a little bit too much tequila. You're the first plant friend in real life, I think, that I like got drunk with. And it was really fun. I highly recommend drinking responsibly, but having cocktails with plant friends. Our conversation, we started with plants and kind of talking about what maybe you and I would talk about on a podcast. And it just grew from there and was just a lovely evening.
It was a lot of fun. And I tried to, I mean, I'm 6'4", 220 pounds, and I had two drinks. It's probably because I don't drink, but I got a little toasty with you, Maria.
Got a little toasty on the rooftop in San Diego. It was great. I was hungover for like two straight days. That's what This Is 30 is. And also, you gave a beautiful rendition of the Bloom and Grow Radio theme song.
I tried. Yeah, I definitely tried. I want to come in with that bass. You know, I feel like you've got that nice high tone. I can come in with the bass. We can do something nice.
We'll
harmonize. Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. You got to start me off, though.
Okay. 5, 6, 7, 8. Doom, doo, 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 doo.
Wait, sorry. I forgot that was it. I was just going to say Bloom and Grow Radio.
Oh, let's just do, okay. 5, 6, 7, 8, Bloom and Grow Radio.
Oh,
okay,
yeah, we'll
ready? 5, 6, 7, 8, Bloom and Grow
Radio. I messed that up 100%.
You did great. I'm proud of you. So I'm so happy to have you on the show because not only you're my plant friend and I think you're super cool, you love houseplants, but you are like the outdoor urban gardening guy. I mean, your house and your setup that you've done and the food that you grow for yourself is so impressive. And it's something that I have really just started dabbling in with my tiny little balcony garden. And we're at the beginning of the growing season. And I thought it would be fun to kind of have a conversation on indoor versus outdoor growing and how to take those first couple of steps. Do you feel like you could lead us through a little bit?
Yeah, let's do it. I think it's interesting because I've gone on the opposite journey, right? Houseplants came second for me, not first.
Yeah.
And I think most people my age, it's the opposite. Like most of us live in small spaces, so houseplants are the natural first step, whereas I kind of went the opposite direction.
We're the yin and yang of the gardening community.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
And we're both like self-taught, trying to just figure it out too, which I love. So before we get into that, I'd love to just hear a little bit about your journey to plant parenthood, outdoors or indoors, and how you built Epic Gardening to what it is today.
Yeah, it really is sort of a random tale. I didn't grow up gardening at all. I didn't have any of that experience. I was just like a Southern California kid growing up in the suburbs, skateboarding and surfing and collecting rocks and gems and nerdy stuff like that. And then after college, I was living in a small townhouse, so really not a lot of space, probably like most listeners. And I grew some stuff with my brother. I said, hey, you want to grow some plants this summer? Just totally out of the blue. We went down to the nursery. He did basil in containers, which is a really classic and good first choice. I decided to go balls to the wall and I did hydroponic cucumbers indoors, just straight out of the gate, which did not really turn out that well at all. I got the cucumbers, but they just tasted terrible. I took a bite. I legitimately almost like gagged and had to spit it out. It tasted so bad, but that really did hook me. Like from there on, I was like, okay, you can manipulate how a plant grows. You can succeed and fail at it. There's a process. You can get better at it over time and you can reap the rewards. For me, edibles really did hook me because they're is a, I guess, a point to the edible, right? There's something you're supposed to do with it at the end of its life versus a houseplant. And I've got nothing against them. They're more of an aesthetic piece. With edibles, I'm trying to achieve a goal, right? I'm trying to get my beans to harvest or get my tomatoes so I can use them. And so that's really what hooked me. And then from there, Epic Gardening started because I was a tech nerd and I liked building websites. So I built a blog and really started to connect with people online about hydroponics. And then eventually, as my interest expanded, so did the website. And then we built out, you know, the YouTube, the podcast, the Instagram, all the different channels. And now it's kind of its own crazy monster where I get to connect and talk to people like you about plants. And that's what I do for my life. That's my job.
A few things. Number one, you're born and bred in San Diego, which I'm so jealous of. So you also, I feel like, have just been able to grow up around all the most beautiful plants and probably see so many people growing awesome stuff. Like that just was in your like vernacular, I'm sure.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is I've had a bunch of friends come out to San Diego from the houseplant world that I know and lose their minds because they're walking through.
Yeah, like me.
Yeah, like you. I mean, I'm sure you're probably walking around and looking at some of the ornamental landscaping in San Diego and being like, that plant's like $400 at a nursery or whatever, you know, just because it all grows here. I mean, I know a lot of people are keeping birds of paradise as houseplants. That's kind of like a poppin' houseplant right now. For us, we walk by it.
Everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, for us, we walk by it and it's like grass or it's like a rock. It's just everywhere. And especially not coming from a gardening background as a kid, it was all so normalized, the diversity of things we could grow here, that I just didn't really put any stock into it. And I'm almost rediscovering it now.
And succulents too, man. I mean, living in New York, I have to work so hard for my succulents to do well, just with, you know, really making sure they have the perfect lighting. And the succulents are just thriving, and like jade is bloom. I've never seen jade bloom before. Mm-hmm. That's the first time I saw it blooming was outdoors in California. Cause I guess as a houseplant, I didn't even know that was a thing, cause it's just never going to get the light that it really needs to
right.
bloom.
Yeah. I mean, I think, for example, like monsteras, which are a super popular houseplant, produce a fruit that you can eat. And I don't think a lot of people know that either. And so when you grow a plant indoors, you know, no plant evolved indoors, no plant's endemic to inside a house. And so I think a lot of people forget that all these plants evolved and developed outside, and oftentimes not even in climates like here in San Diego, oftentimes in much more tropical climates. And the way they actually grow, their life cycle is much different than what we experience indoors.
Totally. And I want to jam on that with you a little bit more. But I also just wanted to say, you plan to grow stuff with your brother. He goes the basil route, which makes total sense. And you go hydroponic cucumbers. That is like so random. How did your brain, like, how did you even know that? Like, what was that process?
There was no process. Okay, so here's what I can think is the process. I said to myself, which is something I would laugh at now, I said, I don't have any space, so I can't grow outdoors, right? Which is a really common thing I hear people tell me now. And I say, actually, there's many different ways to do that, and we could talk about that later.
Right.
But I said, okay, well, I guess if I don't have any light and I want to grow cucumbers, which is a light-loving plant, you know, you're growing that thing, it's producing flowers, it's producing fruit, it needs a lot of energy. I guess I'll just make my own sun and have a grow light indoors and do it that way. And so I really don't have, I just was like, I guess that's the way I have to do it, you know, and that's how it started. So not the most intelligent choice, but it definitely got me hooked more than I think growing basil in a container would have.
Well, yeah. And you said something too, and the more that I've gotten to know you, you're definitely like a challenge oriented person. Like, I think you thrive when you set a goal for yourself and try to achieve that. And I saw that with Billy as we were growing our plant collection, where I was really into the house plants. I was into the herb garden that we started too. Like, that's how, that was kind of our gateway into house plants. But I saw him be able to really resonate with growing stuff because he saw the end point. He liked the idea of growing stuff and then being able to use it in what we were cooking. And that was kind of very important for him as his kind of entryway to like accepting my houseplant obsession. And I kind of love that with gardening. I feel like there's something to garden for everyone. There are some people that houseplants are the perfect solution for what they can do, and their plant parent personalities like are conducive to only houseplants and not outdoors. And then there are other people that want to grow but really should be growing outdoors, and there's benefit on both sides. You know, it's just about who's approaching what.
Yeah, no, I mean, totally. We're talking about like half or more of all the life on the planet, right? And so there's going to be something for everyone. If you're more of an aesthetically minded person, you can go full on houseplants, or even maybe you're aesthetic, but also somewhat laissez-faire, I guess, about how you care for them, then maybe you go the succulent route, or just super easy to care for plants. Or maybe if you're like me, you just come up with a bunch of random challenges and try to do them. Like right now, I've got maybe 100 pounds of potatoes that are probably about to come out of my front yard in the next month or so. And I'm going to try to live off of it. So,
oh yeah. Your apocalypse. Tell us about your apocalypse challenge.
Yeah. So I'm like oddly obsessed with the apocalypse, or just like the many ways that the world could end. And I'll talk about like zombies or like a plague or whatever. And I'll talk about it with my friends, and we'll be like, what will we actually do? You know? And I said, guys, you guys don't even realize how valuable I am in the apocalypse, because none of you guys could live for that long once the food runs out, but I could live forever. I know how to grow all of this stuff. So I could be like the least talented fighter, like the least talented runner or whatever you need in the apocalypse, just put me in that farm, baby, and I'll just be growing those potatoes, you know? And so what I thought I would do is see if I could live off my own garden for a month. So it's going to start in June. And the rules are I can only eat what I can grow, forage for, of which there's some foraging around here in San Diego. And I'm also allowing myself to fish because I just don't know how I would grow enough fats or proteins to actually survive the month without being able to do that. And then I'm also allowing myself to barter with other people for things that they've produced at a fair market value. So I can't like take some potatoes and like barter it for a burrito, right? I can barter for like maybe some eggs or some butter or some oil. Right. And yeah, it's just kind of my way of stretching my gardening muscle, I guess, and keeping myself interested in the craft year after year. And hopefully by sharing it, I can show people that, hey, if I can do this in a front yard garden a mile away from downtown San Diego, pretty sure you can grow some basil in your apartment, you know?
Right. You can at least grow some basil.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm really excited to see how your community shows up for you in that challenge and what the bartering looks like. I can't wait to follow your journey there.
Yeah, it's going to be...
Also, I'm terrified
for you. I'm terrified for myself. And also, like, things with Epic Gardening have been so crazy lately that my apocalypse preparations have not really been the best. So we'll see how it goes. I'm really hoping that these potatoes are going to last me the month. We'll see how it goes.
Oh my gosh. Well, stay tuned on Epic Gardening Instagram, guys, to follow Kevin's challenge. So let's talk indoors versus outdoors. I feel like in the last like maybe 6 or 8 months of me having houseplants, I'm finding that it's really important to understand houseplants are amazing. And bottom line, everyone should care for a plant, whether it's indoors or outdoors. Like the emotional benefits of keeping plants and watching them grow is so crucial, I think, to every human. I obviously love houseplants, but I'm realizing that I think I started and I only depended on care cards. I only depended on reading blogs, and I had my jade, and the blog told me to water my jade twice a week and put it in a sunny windowsill. So I did, but I didn't take the next step to think a little broader about the fact that, oh, like jade comes from outside. Like these plants come from outside. And a lot of these tropical foliage plants come from not New York City, like very different conditions and environments. So what are your like thoughts, since you really are growing houseplants and so many outdoor edibles and you have a yard, which I'm so jealous about. What are your thoughts on indoors versus outdoor growing, and what maybe indoor people should think about with outdoor growing, and maybe what outdoor people should think about with indoor growing? Give me your thoughts.
Sure. Yeah, let's riff on it. So it's really funny because I was recently hanging out with Summer of Homestead Brooklyn, and we were kind of riffing about this as well because she's both an indoor and outdoor grower, but obviously much better known for what she's doing in her insane house that I had the pleasure of visiting and doing a video with her. But yeah, I think what we were talking about, and I think also you and I over our too many tequilas, was the fact that indoors is not an environment almost any plant is normally evolving in. It's just not happening. I mean, I guess you could say that maybe a rainforest under canopy is like somewhat like an indoor environment, but even then, not really,
yeah,
right?
Not really.
And so I always think it's kind of funny when you'll see the care card say like, oh, this plant is exceptionally sensitive to being moved even a single inch. And it's like, probably not, because almost no plant would survive if that was the case in the wild, right? And so that's, I think that sometimes the indoor plant cares, it's very limited in its thought. It's just not taking into account that all these plants evolved in the wild, right? And so what you're trying to do is best mimic those conditions as you can and think of it from the ground up rather than just, like you said, with your jade. You know, at the very beginning of your plant life, you're just following a recipe, right? And it's like, it's the difference between cooking and being a chef. A cook can figure out how to follow a recipe. A chef is making that recipe up,
yeah,
or understands all the variables that are going into what creates a beautiful dish and says, okay, I've got, it's like Iron Chef. It's like, okay, I've got like orange peels and a fish and 20 pieces of basil. Like, what can I make with this? Mm-hmm. Right. Whereas maybe a cook would struggle with that. A chef says, okay, well, I know that the orange peel has some acidic qualities and the basil has this and the fish has this. And if I combine them all in this way, this is what happens. I would say what indoor growers can learn from outdoor growers is you do have to have a little bit more of that knowledge in the outdoor growing environment, especially when it comes to edibles, because like you said about Billy, there is a goal with an edible. You're trying to get something that you can eat, right? So whether that's basil, just trying to get a nice, bushy, beautiful plant full of healthy leaves that you can use for pesto, you need to know how to prune that plant correctly, and you need to know the conditions it needs to get that big, bushy basil. If it's tomatoes, you know, you need to actually know, okay, why is my tomato not producing these big, beautiful tomatoes? Or why do I have blossom end rot on the bottom of them? And so what I would say is, from the outdoor gardener's perspective, indoor gardeners could learn a lot more about the fundamental basics of what plants need to actually grow. And then they could use that knowledge to say, okay, this is probably what's happening to my staghorn fern, or like, this is probably what's going on with my maidenhair. I should probably do this because of the foundational knowledge, not just because they read it on a blog or because, you know, the little plant tag told them to do it.
Yeah. Like, it's all about zooming out and like empowering yourself to actually understand what's going on with your plant, instead of just being like knowing three facts about it, you know, like how much it's supposed to get watered. Two things came to mind for me with my journey starting to grow outside. I was lucky enough to have Joe Lample on my show for like my fifth episode. We did an episode on growing living Christmas trees and then planting them outside after. So he kind of taught us how to have these living Christmas trees indoors and then how we can replant them. And he said something about like, when you are replanting the tree outdoors, you have to make sure that the root ball like is kind of at the top of the soil. Like, you're not shoving the root ball too deep into the ground and then covering it. That like was a big light bulb for me, because I had to think about the tree and that root system and, oh, right, like, in Mother Nature, like outdoors, that tree would rot if it was just like sitting in all of this water and there was no kind of like trickle down effect. And then realizing, oh yeah, like with my house plants, if I'm sticking the roots at the bottom of the pot and then covering them with 3 inches of soil on top, which I probably did when I was starting out because I didn't know better, then that soggy soil is like sitting on top of all the roots, and it's going to be way more inclined to have root rot than if I kind of put the roots at the top of that soil line.
Yeah. And it's stuff like that that I think is what an indoor grower could take from an outdoor grower. But, you know, there's stuff that I've learned from the houseplant world as well, like mainly that it's okay to grow things that don't have a quote unquote purpose. I mean, the purpose is that they're beautiful, right? And the purpose is that they enhance your life. They make you feel better.
And they clean your air.
To me,
they make you healthier.
Yeah, they clean your air. I don't know, though. Like, I've always wondered, I know that there's a swath of houseplants that will take formaldehyde or benzene or whatever out of the air. Is it really that much compared to how much it could be? You know what I mean? Like, that's always what I've wondered. I think I definitely smell, my house smells better. But I'm not sure if I'm like, I was poisoned before and now I'm not because the air is a little bit cleaner. You know what I mean? But it is nice.
I think you could think about it as maybe even the difference of like drinking your tap water versus like running it through a Brita, or like, you know, you're still getting the gross stuff, or like having one of those like filters on your sink.
Yeah.
It's not like the tap water is going to poison you in New York. You know, my New York City tap water is fine, but I prefer to have it a little bit cleaner. And it is interesting to like see the little specks that end up in my Brita filter.
Yeah, for sure. And also for me, I think almost even more so than that is just being able to be at rest in my living space and having nature around me still. Mm-hmm. That's probably the thing that I get the most out of my indoor houseplant little jungle that I've got going on. And I actually mix in edibles indoors too, because why not? If I know how to grow them, I might as well.
Yeah. You have your cute little reading nook, right? Your chair with all of your houseplants.
Yeah, that's like my big leather chair in the corner with this little Edison lamp, very hipster, and all these plants that are sort of surrounding it, kind of like a iron green throne if you're a Game of Thrones watcher.
Oh man, don't even get me started with Game of Thrones.
Yeah, no, I can't even, no spoilers. I can't talk about it right now. I'll just say that much. Yeah, and then off to the side, I've got this three-tier LED bamboo setup that I can do a lot of my seed starting on, or it's actually powerful enough to keep succulents decently alive, but here in San Diego, I can just grow those outside, so I don't bother with that. But yeah, I like to mix it up indoors.
Do you have a favorite houseplant?
I'm big on the string of hearts right now. It's just a really unique trailing sort of succulent-like plant, which you don't see a whole lot of, I guess, unless you're dealing with the string of bananas or the string of pearls. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm really big on that one right now.
I love the string of hearts. I don't have one, but a few people have been sending me photos of theirs lately because I think like I feel like variegated string of hearts have just like been in nurseries lately because I feel like I've been seeing them a little bit more frequently. And they are like this beautiful lacy kind of trailing plant. And their leaves are just amazing to look at.
It's got to be one of the most unique looking succulent style leaf patterns that I've ever seen. And then combining it with that trailing, I mean, mine is trailing maybe 6-7 feet right now, and it just looks awesome. And then you just keep propagating it over and over and over again, and you just have as many as you want.
And sharing them with all your plant friends.
Yeah, exactly. I'll mail you some.
Yeah. Oh, I'd love that. Perfect. So I really want to set this interview up with, I think everybody really should take a step. We're at the beginning of a beautiful growing season. And if you're someone like, I mean, I've only had two growing seasons on my little balcony, and we've only grown herbs and tomatoes and a few things. But I do really feel like I learned so much in each growing season, and I am a better houseplant parent from doing it, whatever step you want to take, right? Like the first summer, I had like an epic tomato fail. And then the second summer, I decided to challenge myself and learn how to grow tomatoes from seeds. And then I grew a bunch of tomatoes, which was so fun. And I like had such an appreciation for understanding how to grow something from a seed, which I never had. So I want to encourage everyone listening to ideally like take a step towards growing something outdoors if you have the ability, or like maybe something on your windowsill. You hear that slurping, plant friends? That is me on my dregs of my daily dose of greens, courtesy of today's sponsor, Equilibria. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with unique science-backed products that help bring your mind and body back into harmony. I always have loved green juice and greens powders. Obviously, I love plants. I love growing plants. I love eating plants. Plants are good for you. And I have tried most greens powders brands on the market, honestly, at this point. I have to say, I'm really loving the Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens. I might argue it's probably one of the best tasting greens powders I've ever had, and that says a lot because I've tried most of them. The Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens contains an immune antioxidant and detox blend, along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and veggies. There's no way I'm eating 35 fruits and vegetables throughout the day, but I love that I'm getting little doses and the micronutrients that are in each of the different veggies and fruits, right? Plus, they're certified organic, which I love. A lot of the competitors are not. I just mix one scoop of the greens powder into my water every day, and I'm shocked at how delicious this powder tastes. It's kind of like apple juice. I started back on the greens powder bandwagon because this spring, in this like season of rejuvenation, I'm kind of rejuvenating, doing an overhaul of my health. I've returned to my workout routine. I'm getting in more sleep. I've recommitted to my morning practice, and I've made this Equilibria Nutri-Greens part of that morning practice, drinking the powder in water in the morning. Plus, I love a female-founded company, right? Don't we all? If you want to try this greens powder, Equilibria is hooking you up with 15% off. Head to myeq.com and use code BLOOM for 15% off Equilibria's daily Nutri-Greens and so many other different products on their website. That's myeq.com and use code BLOOM at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test. Because, plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results. So, Kevin, if you were talking to me, like maybe in my first growing season, I've only done houseplants. I want to take my plant passion outdoors, but I don't have that knowledge. Like, I don't have that zoomed out knowledge. Like, what is your edible gardening, like 101 first steps for someone who wants to take that jump?
Sure. Yeah. So I've thought about this a lot because I would say just don't do what I did, right? I did the opposite of what I would recommend most people to do, which is I went way too complex and I grew a pretty complicated plant to grow, all things being equal. And so what I like to tell people now is the very first thing is don't grow something you don't like to eat. That's the number one rule because I'm not going to care for me. I don't care if my sage plant doesn't do well because I don't really care about eating sage that much. Mm-hmm. And I don't work it into a lot of recipes. I mean, I still have it and it's still growing pretty well. But like if it failed, I would not be that sad about it. So grow something you like to eat, number one. The second thing, very close second, would be grow a simpler plant. And what I mean by simpler is a plant that you're not even growing through its full life cycle. You know, like basil, almost any herb or any leafy green. Pick your favorite herb or leafy green and grow that because you're only eating the vegetation of it, right? Lettuce will bolt. It will go to seed and it will produce a seed head and those seeds will rain down and you'll have more lettuce. None of us grow it to that point because we don't need to eat that part. We want those nice, young, tender leaves. And so in contrast to, let's say, a cucumber or a tomato, you're growing that plant through its full life cycle because you're eating the fruit of that plant with the seeds inside. So the plant has to get to the end of its life. There's just more things that can go wrong in that situation. And so I would say grow very simple plants that you like to eat. That's the number one and number two rule.
What would you say are like top 10 or however many you want to list, easiest, like simplest, not easiest, but simplest plants to grow? Obviously herbs.
Yep, herbs. And within herbs, you've got basil is probably one of the easiest ones of all time. Rosemary is more of a hard stemmed or hardwood style plant, but once you get it established, it basically just grows like a shrub. And actually here in San Diego, we use it as ornamental like hedging. So you can just walk down the street and you can see a big ass rosemary bush. In the leafy green world, I would say almost any lettuce that you enjoy is going to be a good choice. Arugula is really easy to grow. Spinach is a little bit more difficult, but if you like it, then definitely give it a shot. It just takes a little bit more time to germinate. And also it's a little bit more heat sensitive typically. But if like you, Maria, if you're in a colder climate and it's not really warming up right now, that's actually good for spinach. So go ahead and give spinach a shot. If you do want to get into something that's maybe a little bit more complex, you could go for peas. Peas are a vining plant that just kind of grow up whatever you put them next to. And pretty much after they're established, they just kind of go and you can just keep picking them. In fact, you kind of have to keep picking them because picking them, those nice like snap peas, that's going to help produce more down the line. So peas would be a really good one. If you want to get even more intense than that, then of course you could jump into like the peppers, the tomatoes, you know, the cucumbers. But most of those are going to require perhaps maybe a little more space than you might have. Or just a little bit more care. And I'd rather have someone get a couple wins under their belt with a really delicious basil that they've turned into a pesto and eaten on pasta than, you know, one really epic fail, like you said, with your tomatoes or even me with my cucumbers. I was kind of demoralized after that, even though I was kind of still hooked on gardening.
Yeah. My like gateway, I feel like our two when we were growing, the two that resonated the most with us was basil because it's my favorite smell and like I would sit with my plants in the morning and just smell the basil and smell the lavender. And like just the sensory overload of the smell was worth me really investing in trying to figure out how to grow it, let alone Billy makes like amazing walnut pesto that we put on everything now. So like that's, I feel like we can never have enough basil to grow. And then another thing we grew that we loved were chives. And we would take the chives and put them in our eggs every morning. And I feel like that feeling of like going to the garden, snipping the chives and scrambling like them directly into the eggs was so empowering and so cool. And the like effect, the immediate gratification was so amazing. So those are the two that like we always feel like are the first two things to go into our garden now.
Yeah, I know. Chives are great. And I think you touched on something really important there because especially with herbs, right? Herbs are super expensive at the grocery store. They're almost all the time they're sold in those stupid little like single use plastic packages for insane prices. And if you can run out to the garden, snip some chives, which effectively, once they're seeded, they kind of grow like grass. You can keep snipping them and they just keep coming back and then throw them right into your omelet. You get that connection from garden to kitchen.
Yeah.
And then you get that personal satisfaction. You're like, hell yeah. Like, look at me. I'm a total baller.
Exactly.
You eat your fresh eggs and it tastes so good. It literally will not ever get fresher than that because, you know, the plants are alive, not 10 seconds before you throw it into the pan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just something about it that just like lights you up and you're like, oh man, I need to do more of this. You know, that like first tomato you cut that you grew yourself too, like that's a wild feeling.
Yeah, it puts you down the path. You're like, oh, if I could do the chives in my omelet, like, maybe I should be able to do this next season or I want to try this next season. And it really just kind of hooks you and you get addicted to it.
Yeah. And I feel like it's really nice. I mean, houseplants have quote unquote seasons because the light does change as the seasons outdoors move forward. But you're not experiencing a growing season with houseplants the way you are with your outdoor plants. And it is really cool to experience that in New York, like May to September growing season where you have a seed, it turns into a plant, you eat the fruit, it dies back, and then it comes back the next year. And you get to like build on that experience. In house plants, it's really, you only get to go back like that if you kill a plant and then you get a new plant and you're like, okay, this time I'm going to do this. But on, you know, with our two growing seasons, like we learned so much from that first season that we didn't know anything. And it made the next season come around. Like you have to wait. You have to wait those three other, you know, fall, winter, spring to then kind of start again and set new goals for yourself. It's just, it's a different experience.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And I think that what we're missing, you might say, in today's society is that connection back to nature, which is we evolved within the environment, right? And we do still live in nature, of course, but we've sort of hacked it a little bit and we've built cities and we have the internet and we have all this modern technology, but our biology doesn't seem to have changed that much, right? And so we still need time in the sun. We still need time around our friends and family. And at least in my view, we still need that connection back to the earth and we need to sort of see the way that the seasons flow. It seems like we all feel better when that happens. Mm-hmm. And at least for me, gardening is my way of doing that.
Yeah, totally. So what are like the brass tacks of outdoor gardening? Like, what do I need to know? Like, what soil do I need? What kind of containers do I need? How am I fertilized? Like, what's the process for someone who's never done it before?
Yeah, sure. So the most important thing in outdoor gardening is pretty much always going to be your soil, right? Mm-hmm. And I think with indoor gardening, sometimes, I'm not saying it's not important, but the soil has to do a little bit less.
Yeah.
The plant just has to remain alive. It has to not die. Whereas outdoors, you would much rather that the plant get everything it needs, right? So you want that really beautiful, healthy soil mix. So typically what you're going to want to do with a really basic outdoor mix is you can do a third compost, a third perlite or some equivalent, maybe rice hulls or vermiculite, for example, and then a third of a peat moss or a coconut coir. And basically what you're talking about there is one third has to have organic matter nutrients for the soil. One third has to retain some water so it doesn't drain out really quickly. And one third has to make sure that it doesn't hold up too much water. And so your roots don't rot out. And so if we're talking container gardening, that's a really good healthy mix. If you're talking going a little bit more extreme and going into the raised bed world, we could definitely start talking about that, but I'll stick to containers for now.
Yeah, just basic. If we're working on a balcony garden, a first step.
Totally. Yeah. And that's going to be most everyone, right? Most of us don't have the space to have the raised beds. Containers. I'm a big fan of terracotta. I think you and I have talked about that before, but terracotta is also going to lose a lot more moisture out of the soil than, let's say, a plastic or a wooden pot, for example. And so material kind of does matter, kind of does depend on where you're planting. You know, if you're planting on a south-facing balcony that's getting blasted by the sun, maybe you choose a container that is actually going to retain a little more water. Terracotta might dry out too quickly. But what I find really helpful, at least on those balconies, is any sort of railing planter. And it depends on your railing. Sometimes if you have a wood railing, you'll want like a sit on top. If you have a metal railing, you'll want one that will kind of like strap to the edge. Mm-hmm. But those make super efficient use of space because you can hang them over and you're not even eating up into your footprint of your balcony. You can hang them over and then you can even grow like peas. Peas typically trail upwards, but on a balcony, you can actually have them just hang downwards.
Oh,
and that's just a really creative way to squeeze out, you know, some edible peas that actually look really cool. And you're taking advantage of the space that you have. Instead of saying, oh, I can't grow peas because they trellis up 6 feet. We'll just let them hang down 6 feet and you're solving a problem right there.
I love that. I love the idea of covering my ugly balcony with peas, like trailing down. That's so cool. The soil you talk about, one-third, one-third, one-third. Can you buy pre-made soil, like gardening soils are good? Do you feel like you need to make your own mix? I feel like that's where get really intimidated and like I don't even know where to get compost. You know what I
totally.
Mean?
Yeah, totally. That's actually – I should have mentioned that. I'm thinking from my I have so much space, look at me perspective. You totally can and probably should just buy a potting mix if you're going to be growing in containers in small space. Most of us just can't grab our bushels and buckets and like mix soil. I do it because it ends up being cheaper, but I also have the space and luxury to be able to do it, right? So yeah, I would totally say I'm a big fan of the Fox Farm products. When it comes to buying bag mixes, they have, I think, Ocean Forest and Happy Frog. I'm a big fan of the Recipe 420, which obviously is not geared towards edibles. It's geared towards a certain type of plant, but it still works.
I love Espoma Organics. Do you ever use
Espoma? Espoma is really good too. I mean, honestly, as long as you get a high quality potting mix, the brand matters a little bit less than I think some people would think.
Yeah.
You just want to avoid one that's got tons and tons of forest products and tons of large wood chippy particles that haven't really been composted or broken down, because I think you guys would know if you're growing houseplants in that, it's a little bit annoying to grow in that too. So it's kind of similar principles would apply.
Mm-hmm. All right. So starting off with the potting mix, and then since we're talking about soil, when do you start fertilizing?
So that's super plant dependent. If you're going to be growing herbs or lettuce, oftentimes you can just grow straight in the soil and you don't need to fertilize because you're going to be done with it in 30 to 55 days, mm-hmm. right? And so you don't really even need to. If you're growing something more extensive, like maybe tomatoes, definitely you want to fertilize your tomatoes. And I like to do it at certain growth points, right? So, you know, before it's putting out a lot of fruit, it's going to need a little bit more nitrogen to actually throw out a lot more vegetation. And then as soon as it starts getting towards that fruiting phase, they're going to be using more phosphorus potassium to produce the flowers, to set the fruit, to grow nice juicy fruits. And so I like to kind of mix it up there. And so again, it's super plant dependent. If you're starting out at the very basics, oftentimes you don't really need to fertilize. And then once you're done with, let's say you harvest out your spinach or your lettuce, you can actually just refresh that soil by mixing in a little bit more compost, or perhaps mixing in some fertilizer and topping it off with a little bit more potting soil. And then you can plant back in that with something new. And that's probably what I would recommend because, again, it's a simpler process mm-hmm. and I'm all about getting those wins.
Keeping it simple. And another yep. simple thing that I feel like houseplant people might not appreciate how important it is for outdoor gardens that I've learned the hard way is your containers have to have drainage. It's not yeah. like a house plant where you can kind of get away with making your own drainage and really contain, like really just being on top of the watering schedule, because like last summer, we got so much rain in the summer. You really need some place for the water to go. Two things about Fiella Farm. My mom is an incredible gardener. She turns her whole front yard into a garden. She gets her compost at the dump. She goes to the dump yep. and brings like huge garbage bags and just gets like all this compost for free, which I think is so funny. And then number two, she buys containers. Like last year, she bought these like plastic containers at the dollar store for like a dollar each. They were like long rectangular containers, but they didn't have drainage. So she made me, my sister, and Billy take these rusty nails and hammers and like make our own drainage. So we were just sitting in our front yard, like pounding these nails into the bottom of the containers to make holes.
I like it. Yeah. No, I mean, the thing about it is you can repurpose tons of different things to be container gardens. And actually in my book, there's a lot of different plans I have for container gardens that are made out of like 2-liter bottles or very simple repurposed things. And that's not to say you have to do that. Maybe you want to get a container that looks a little bit nicer or has more aesthetic value to it. But if you want, you can get down and dirty. You can grab some cheap ones or repurpose some containers and make it work. And it's just kind of the sky's the limit on how to repurpose and how to get creative with it.
We've got the containers down. We've got the soil down. Google whatever you're growing to figure out what your fertilizing schedule is going to be. What about watering?
Yeah, watering, it's pretty similar to houseplants, actually. I mean, you want to keep your soil relatively moist, but not overly wet and not overly dry. And I think, I don't know about you, Maria, but I would always say that for houseplants, most people's number one problem is watering.
Yes, they're either overwatering, going, yeah.
Yeah, it's almost always overwatering. Sometimes it's underwatering. And I would say in containers, especially when it comes to edibles, because there is that goal, that end goal of having something delicious to eat, I think a lot of gardeners overlove their plants. And that's a phrase I stole from Joe Gardner because I just spoke with him as well. And we both agreed that one of the biggest problems is you do too much to your plant. And one thing I really love is this quote that my friend Khaled, he's the plant charmer on Instagram, really great gardener. He says, "We often forget that we don't grow our plants. They grow themselves and we're there to provide them with what they need to grow." Their genetics are set. They're doing what their genes and their DNA is telling them to do. It's almost like running a program, but they're going to fail if they don't get what they need. And so our job is just give them what they need, right? So when it comes to watering, it's really nice, I find, to throw some mulch on top of your containers outdoors. It's going to help protect your container soil, helps it dry out a little bit less. You can water deeper and water less often, which is kind of a general principle I try to stick to, is it's much better to water really, really deep and then not have to water for a while, because that kind of does mimic how it would happen in the wild. You're getting rain and then you're just not getting rain. You're not getting the exact amount of moisture you need every single day, right?
When you mean deep, can you elaborate on that? How deep, I think, means heavily, but like to what extent? Like how long are you like letting the water flow through the pot and all that good stuff?
Yeah, you're right. It is a little trickier with containers because if you water super deep and you let the water just roll over the pot for a while and it has drainage, you might just be washing out quite a bit of organic matter and nutrients. So you don't want to just flood it and just let it run for a while. You just want to make sure that the soil, when you water it, gets wet enough that it's penetrating the entire root ball and then it's not hanging in there for too long. So adequate drainage in that soil mix, but you don't want to constantly top it off all of the time. So it's okay to let it dry down a little bit, maybe 1 to 2 to 3 inches, and then hit it with another nice soak rather than, like I was saying, just giving it tiny little bits every now and then. To me, that seems to work better. But again, like almost anything in gardening, it's going to be dependent on the plant. Some plants prefer that, and some plants actually do kind of need that constant moisture. So again, it's one of those sort of Google the specific plant and you'll learn a lot more than just getting a prescription off of this podcast.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny. I was just going to ask you, okay, so what does that look like? How many days in between? And then I stopped myself because that's not what we're doing anymore. You have to pay attention to your plant. And the other thing too is we're all growing in different areas of the country. So I'm lucky that I have this like incredible southern exposure in the summer. And I end up having to water my herbs every other day, if not every day in the heat of the summer, because the soil does dry out just so quickly because it's so hot. But if you don't have that lighting situation, it's going to look differently. So I think the key that you hit on was giving it a deep water and then letting the soil dry out a little bit, not completely dry, before you replenish with another deep water, whatever that looks
exactly.
like for you.
Totally. Yeah. And again, like think of how many things it depends on, right? You've got the amount of sun you're getting, the plant is going to use more or less water depending on what plant it is. The pot you're using will leach more or less water if it's terracotta versus not.
Versus plastic. Yeah.
Exactly. The size of the pot, right? The bigger the pot, the less often you need to water, because the plant's not going to be able to use it all up. And so oftentimes I try to grow in the largest size pot I can afford to grow in, because my plant's generally going to be healthier. And also my work goes down. I can give it a nice deep water. And then what'll happen is, let's say I've got like a tomato that's right in the middle of a larger pot. when the tomato's roots are have used up some of the water right next to them, capillary action will start wicking water in from the sides, and that's why you have to water less. So there's a lot of reasons why you would go a bigger pot. But yeah, to your point, there's so many things to think about that I think it's much better to understand how and why plants use water, and then you can just solve those questions from there, you know?
Yeah, man. I love that. And what about people who aren't fortunate with super, super sunny outdoor space? Are there any edibles that are a little bit shade tolerant? I mean, I know the rule of thumb with edibles is like 6 to 8 hours of direct sunlight. Are there anything that maybe our shaded listeners could maybe try, experiment with?
Yeah, there definitely are. So spinach can do really well in some shade. Give that one a try. Most leafy greens will do well in shade. They will just grow a little bit less quickly, right? And that's fine. You're doing what you can in the space that you have is kind of what I'm all about. And so if the only way you can possibly grow lettuce is to put it in an area that gets 3 to 5 hours of sun, it's still going to grow. It's just going to be slow. And really, that's the only way you're going to get it. So you might as well do it. So yeah, again, I would just say the things that you're eating for their leaves are going to do better in less sun. Things that are producing fruits, they often just need a ton of sun to get enough energy to make that happen.
Oh, that's a good rule of thumb. See, this is very helpful. So your book is coming out where you teach us how to do this, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's called Field Guide to Urban Gardening, and the subtitle is How to Grow Plants No Matter Where You Live. So the whole goal with this book, and it does go right to this combo, which I'm really glad that we went this direction, is it really isn't about how to grow a tomato or how to grow a basil plant. It's about, okay, how do plants actually use light? How do they use water? What kind of containers make sense? Why do you have a certain soil mix for a certain type of plant? It's those foundational pieces of knowledge. And then we get into some different methods. So we get into, like we just talked about, containers, if you have more space, raised beds, how to do balconies and rooftops, how to grow edibles indoors. So we talk about things like microgreens in that chapter. And then we even get into hydroponics and vertical gardening. And vertical gardening actually is one that I think a lot of small space gardeners will get a lot of success with, because you're growing on a new axis. You're growing on that Z axis. You're going upwards, you know? So it's just a really creative way to squeeze in more space and more yield if you're growing an edible.
I love that. So where can we get your book? I'm so excited to get my hands on it. I'm excited to make Billy read it, because he'll be handling our herbs and vegetables primarily this summer as I'm traveling. Where can we find your book? Where can we find you and follow your Apocalypse Now journey and all the amazing stuff you do at your house in San Diego?
Yeah, sure. So the book, you can get it on Amazon. It's just called Field Guide to Urban Gardening. If you want, one thing I've been doing to kind of get people off on the right foot is if you pre-order the book, you can get a free pack of seeds. So my friend Bridget here in San Diego runs an organic seed company. And so I partnered with her to give people a pack of seeds if they pre-order, which you can find all the stuff for that on epicgardening.com/book. And so then as far as where you can find me, man, anywhere that the internet exists and there's people on it, I'm probably there. So YouTube, my podcast is every day. It's like 5 to 10 minutes, the Epic Gardening podcast. And then I'm on Instagram. It's probably where I'm most active and like chatting with people and talking about gardening. The website has a bunch of in-depth articles, houseplants as well.
Yeah, the website is out of control. You have a blog about everything on your website, man. You do such a good job with your blogs.
Website is my like pride and joy little baby that it's funny because most of the people, like we connected through Instagram, most of my plant friends that I've met in real life might not even know that the website exists because I'm just Instagramming, you know, I'm on the gram all the time.
But no, yeah, I was looking at it this like, morning and I was like, holy moly, he really has, you have like hundreds upon hundreds of blogs.
Yeah, I've got maybe 500 now, I think. Yeah. And it's either like how to grow this plant, how to prevent this pest, how to prevent this disease, you know, that really prescriptive, like super in-depth how-to knowledge that you need to know if you're trying to grow edibles.
Yeah, it would be a great resource for our listeners to go if you pick a plant that you want to grow this summer outside.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say pick a plant and figure out how to grow one plant successfully.
Yes. And I will have the link to the book in my show notes as well if people are interested in getting it. So thank you so much for coming on the show. I can't wait to follow the Apocalypse Challenge and drink tequila with you again sometime soon.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just going to have less this time so I'm coherent.
Yeah, just one.
One for me. Yeah. No, it was great, Maria. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yay. thank you, Kevin, for your plant friendship and this lovely talk. I know that I say this all the time on my show, Plant Friends, but I feel like it is so important for us to understand how these plants that we keep indoors were designed to live outdoors. And what better way to figure that out than by actually growing something outdoors, if that's available to you. Not to mention, the act of growing your own food has you appreciate what you eat on such a deeper level. It is such a rewarding experience. I can't recommend it enough, plant friends. So if you've got the space, the sunlight, or the grow light, and the time, just try it. Just pick a plant and try growing it. There's always a lesson to be learned in that. If you're interested in some of the materials that Kevin and I discussed, I've made a little Amazon storefront list that's linked in the show notes with all of the containers and soils that we discussed today. Thank you, Bloom Living, for sponsoring this episode. I love that the topic of this episode aligned so beautifully with Bloom and what their mission is to make gardening easier for us. Kevin mentioned how great railing planters are for gardeners with small space, just like me and Billy. And Bloom makes some great railing options. Billy and I will actually be trying their rail planters out on our balcony garden this summer. I love that their planters have several different fit options because we all know that all of our railings are probably different widths, different heights. They have holes for adequate drainage, and they just enable us to grow so much more on our little balcony than if we just stuck with our normal planters that live on the ground. So to see all of the different pots and accessories that Bloom Living has to offer, visit bloomliving.com, BLOEM LIVING.com. Figure out where your local Bloom Living dealer is, or shop online at Amazon, Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart, Wayfair, JCPenney, Overstock, you name it. I've included the Bloom Amazon storefront in the show notes, in addition to my Amazon storefront with my favorite Bloom containers and accessories. And you better believe those adorable flamingos are in my accessory shopping cart. And also, my plant friends, thank you. Thank you, my wonderful plant friend patrons, for continuing to support the show. I'm so thankful to you and your support. I hope this episode helps you keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friends, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure you are subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're making sure you're subscribed, why don't you head on over to the review section of whatever podcast player you're tuning into and leave us a review. I would greatly appreciate it. If you want to join the Bloom and Grow Garden Club, head over to bloomandgrowradio.com/garden-club to join the planty fun. When you join, you get a free download of the Keep Blooming print that Molly Mansfield made exclusively for us, and you will also get an email with the password to the private Facebook group, which is what I like to call the plantiest corner of the internet. It is pretty amazing. For behind-the-scenes scoop, plant tips I learn along the way, and sneak peeks of future episodes, follow me on Instagram at Bloom and Grow Radio. And plant friends, I'm here for you. So drop me a line if you have an idea for an episode, live event, or maybe if you're a planty business looking to sponsor the show. I am always here to help you keep blooming and keep growing. Make new plant friends, propagate knowledge, and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, Plant Friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group, so if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will will pop up. So you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test. Because, plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.